Flakes has been rolling along beautifully over the last few weeks while I haven't been here, and just slid into Monday nights as well. A nice little slot in there at 11 o'clock with Finey. No,
that's right.
Good to see you.
Beefy sports hour, apparently, from what I get told. So, it's great to do some stuff with Finey. And, Finey talks all sorts of stuff, but all of a sudden we throw a bit of light on all these weird and wonderful things.
Which we love you for.
Yeah, exactly. And we give a bit of coverage across the board to what's happening in the week in sports. So if you want to listen to that, 11 till midnight if you're a bit of a night owl. So,
absolutely.
A bit of fun.
If you haven't come across Kieran Blake here, folks, if you're just tuning into SEN for the very first time, or you just haven't tuned into this particular time slot, Beefy went on an amazing adventure in 2016, travelling around the world, 365 days of sport, took in so many different sports. We've already showcased a lot of those, and plenty more great chats to come, and back here contributing with us here on Melbourne's Home of Sport on a weekly basis. And today we've got a couple of good chats coming out.
Yeah, definitely. And I caught up with Maxi Frick, the world under-21 speedway champion, in the week, and he's just been crowned Australian under-21 champion, so that's a good thing. And last weekend was the Australian Open of Frisbee Golf, so we're going to catch up with Andrew Ferguson, and he'll talk us through that tournament as well. So that's a major on the Frisbee Golf World Tour. So it's fantastic that we get to see these sports that you will not read about in the paper, apart from this show, on the radio.
Mm. So, exactly right.
No, exactly.
So you get a dose of Beefy on a Sunday. And if you do miss him on a Sunday, you get a dose of Beefy on a Monday night, 11 till 12. And you will learn something. You'll broaden your horizons as to what actually is out there in the sporting landscape.
Oh, exactly. And if you jump on, I hate to plug my website, but I will, 365daysofsport.com. Myself and a friend of mine, Rob, started off, in 2015, 2016, we went to see just so many different sports you've never heard of. But for every sport we actually saw, we actually put a little show together about these sports, which is a lot of fun. Mm. It's very different. And so if you want to see things like gyrocopter racing and wing walking and things like that, those shows are on that website. And there's a lot of podcasts up there now as well, which I've been whacking up sporadically.
Great stuff.
And interviews and stuff that I did around the world, and just blew people away with what we tried to do and how we went about it.
365 days of sport. Make sure you check it out. Hey, we're going to get across to Radio Sport. Alex Chapman's been on board with us right throughout the afternoon. We've got the third one-day international going on at Seddon Park in Hamilton, and very interesting finish possibly coming up. Alex, is that you rejoin us? Australia were sort of motoring along nicely after losing Hanscom and Marsh, and then of course Finch went out, and then very quickly Glenn Maxwell.
That's the beauty of cricket, isn't it, Brett? All of a sudden it can change in the space of 10 or so minutes. Yeah, they were cruising, I guess you could say, at one stage before Kane Williamson brought himself on. Aaron Finch took a bit of a liking to Williamson, going for a few in his first couple of overs, but then he got the key wicket of Aaron Finch, the Australian skipper, caught by Trent Bolt down at deep mid-wicket for a well-made 56, it has to be said. And then the next over, Glenn Maxwell, we both know how dangerous he can be, caught behind off Mitchell Santner. He did review it, but DRS saw just a feather there on the snicko, and he's on his way.
Alex, that's brought Marcus Stoinis to the crease as well. That's going to...
Interesting time.
Exactly.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed his innings in the first match. As much of a Black Caps fan as I am, if you look at it from, I suppose, an unbiased opinion, he played a fantastic innings, and it would be fantastic to see him play well again, but then also equally as great to see him fall short, or for Australia to fall short again.
Well, I suppose we talk about some of the frontline players not there, Alex, but Beefy, I mean, this is a great opportunity for a guy like Marcus Stoinis. I remember talking to him on the radio about 6 months ago and just, dying for an opportunity, and here's a stage, all right, come in.
Oh, exactly.
Make a bit of a name for yourself.
And this is a guy that couldn't get in the Western Australian side that came across to Victoria to try and get some game time, and now look where he's at. And look, this is, we've talked about this before, this is the beauty of 2020 cricket in giving guys a chance to hit some form and show what they can do in the short form of the game.
Yeah, in the big bash.
And he's also an all-rounder, sorry to interrupt there, but he's also an all-rounder who bowls pace, which is something that the Australian team has been struggling for in recent times.
Well, I think that's the case for the Kiwis as well. I mean, they're trying to put, force Jimmy Neesham into all-rounder category, and, it's fair to say he probably hasn't hit the straps quite yet.
It's funny you say that. I was just having a conversation on Twitter with some of my colleagues, and we were kind of saying, actually, is there anyone that can, or that is putting their hand up in domestic cricket in New Zealand that can replace Jimmy Neesham? And unfortunately, with the injury to Corey Anderson at the moment, where he can only bat, there actually isn't anyone.
Yeah.
Kane Williamson, is it just my eyes, but I've noticed this summer, of all the cricket in New Zealand, I've seen him bowl more this summer than across his career, Alex?
Oh, definitely, and that's even with hesitancy from Kane Williamson. He doesn't like bowling himself, whether that's a confidence thing, because in the past he has had to step aside and he was banned for a little while for throwing. He's come back, he's adjusted his action, and he's actually a pretty good bowler, Kane Williamson. I don't think he doesn't get enough credit. He does go for a few, but he flights it very well. He changes his pace very well, and he gets a decent amount of turn. He actually probably gets more turn than Mitchell Santner, who's playing as the frontline spinner.
Yeah.
So, no, it's not just you. He's definitely bowling a lot more this summer.
Got the big wicket of Finch.
Yeah, I actually remember I was at that Auckland test against England when England batted the fifth day out, and it was kind of the day Kane Williamson announced himself as a bowler.
It was. Yeah, I was at that exact match. He's a good bowler. You can't argue with it. He's someone that, if, as we were saying before, you know, if Jimmy Neesham can't fill that all-rounder role, then Kane Williamson can not bowl 10 overs, but he can definitely chip in with 5 or 6.
Quick update on the Auckland Nines, Alex.
So unfortunately for USEN, Hosa and listeners, Melbourne are down 11-7, just nearing half-time in the first half. Penrith Panthers beating the Parramatta Eels 13-0 in the first semi-final. So from your point of view, we're hoping that the Storm can grab it. But regardless of who's in the final, none of the teams in it have actually been in an NRL Auckland Nines final before. So maiden titles potentially on their way.
We'll keep an eye on that. Thank you, Alex. Appreciate it.
Thanks, mate.
Alex Chapman, Radio Sport in New Zealand at 14 past 3.
On 11.16 SEN, a summer of cycling updates for BikeBug, Australia's number one bike shop online and in-store, bikebug.com. The Great Ocean and Otway Classic Ride, March 18 in Torquay. Enter now at Jaguar Unleashed. Sales event on now at Brighton Jaguar.
Let's catch up with Mike Tomalaris, the final stage of the Jayco Herald Sun Tour up at King Lake. Mike.
Hey Brett, here, and coming down to a thrilling conclusion, as a matter of fact, less than 9 kilometres to go. And two races are unfolding here, one for stage honours and one for a place on the podium in the overall classification. When I crossed to you last time, we told you that there was a leading group of 12, and this group of 12 riders doing everything in their power to stay away, attacking each other, hitting each other with everything they've got. There have been many splits in this leading group of 12 as a result of the attacks. The time gap between the group of 12 and the peloton now to under 2 minutes. And I can tell you that on the last climb, further back in the peloton, there was the chase was on for overall honours. Fireworks were taking place with Team Sky. They went bang. Chris Froome, Kenny Elissonde, and Chris Lowe also trying to break the shackles, the tight grip being held by Orica Scott in their defence of the yellow jersey worn by Damien Howson. It looks like Damien Howson will win this race, but as for the minor placings, that's still up for grabs because Kenny Elissonde is in third position, the Team Sky rider, the Frenchman, and Cameron Meyer doing everything in his power to try and climb onto that podium. He's in fourth place, only a handful of seconds behind. Less than 9 kilometres to go. It's all or nothing now, but Damien Howson looks to have wrapped this up. But as I say, 9Ks to go, and anything could still happen.
All right, hopefully he can get it done. The leader heading into the final day by 38 seconds, Orica Scott, said Damien Howson looking to put the icing on the cake. Thank you, Mike. We'll get back to you very shortly. Update there from the Jayco Herald Sun Tour for 2017. 16 past 3, 4 for 145, Australia in the cricket, chasing 282 to defeat New Zealand head on 44. And Marcus Stoinis coming out of the blocks nicely, 17 off his first 23 deliveries.
Yeah, no, it's great to see Stoinis. He's obviously, after just one game, you know, the one game where he's made a statement, he's just going to attack now, and that's going to be his forte.
A little feature interview. You can welcome in our next guest.
Yeah, definitely. Andrew Ferguson, who I caught up with quite a while ago, were playing in the Victorian Open Frisbee Golf or Disc Golf Tournament, and great lad, but he put on one of the majors of the world for disc golf tour, and it was at Mundaring in Perth, and obviously he plays as well. So, Andrew, welcome to the show.
Beefy Brett, thanks for having me on.
No worries at all. So the tournament finished last weekend, and obviously I've read reports, and every player loved it. It was great weather, and you had a decent turnout.
It was, mate. It was. We had a good turnout. I guess half the field were international competitors from all the way from Japan, the US, Finland, Hong Kong, New Zealand, from all over the place. So it was a great turnout, and the weather certainly turned itself on too. I think we had days reaching up to 42 degrees in the hills. So we had some of the competitors coming over from Europe and the US from sub-zero temperatures, pretty much baked.
Yeah, and that's one of the big pluses of having a January tournament in Australia is the guys can get out of Europe and the States and actually get some sun.
That's exactly right. And look, they really enjoyed themselves. It was hot, but for them, you know, it's an absolute highlight coming out to Australia and just seeing our fauna and our flora and being a part of it. We had the competitors staying in a hotel on the beach in Sorrento, so every night they came home and enjoyed the Indian Ocean. So for them, it was fantastic.
Andrew, disc golf, often referred to as frisbee golf. Just for our listeners who haven't come across it, just in layman's terms for them, tell us about it.
Sure. So disc golf, it's basically golf, but with frisbees. The strategy is the same. Instead of hitting a ball down a fairway onto a green,
yep,
and then, you know, putting into a hole, we're basically throwing a disc down a fairway, and we're putting the disc into an elevated metal basket. Mm. It's called a disc catcher or a disc golf pole hole, and basically it's elevated off the ground. It's got chains that hang down, which help catch the disc and drop it in, and that's your hole. The difference, I guess, is that instead of having one ball that we hit, in disc golf we have multiple types of discs. So we've got drivers, we've got fairway drivers, we've got mid-range, we've got putters. They're all engineered slightly differently, aerodynamically, so they can fly, and we choose them depending on the kind of hole we're playing.
So, Andrew, if people haven't seen it, what's the kind of longest distance you can essentially drive a frisbee?
Sure. I mean, look, holes vary in length. Some holes you might have that are only 60 metres long, short par threes. They might be technical in woods, or you might have longer open holes. In disc golf, I guess an average drive, if you've got a longer, say, let's say a par four or par five, a long drive might be up to 130, 140 metres. And that's for someone who's been playing for a few years. Although some of the top pros and even some Australians can be throwing the disc up to 160, 170 metres.
Yeah.
So it's a fair way to watch a frisbee fly.
Yeah, okay. Indeed.
About 40 countries around the world, Andrew, playing.
I believe the number is pretty high. There's about 7,000 courses around the world.
Yeah.
About 5,000 of those courses are in the US.
Yep.
However, the sport is exploding in Europe. For example, in Finland, they had about 40 or 50 courses about 6 or 7 years ago, which is about where Australia is at the moment. And in the last 5 or 6 years, that has reached now to over 500 courses.
Wow.
And it's a mainstream sport there. I mean, you go to any sports store, there's discs on the racks. You can go down, you can play. Generally, the courses are free. Some of them are pay to play. It's a very inexpensive sport to get into. I mean, even one disc will cost you somewhere around about $15, and that's all you really need to get going.
I mean, the beauty of disc golf as well, the way it's set up, is you can actually set up a course in any kind of open space, and that's what they're doing down in Braeside Park in Melbourne, is they've got a big open park that doesn't get used to its full potential, and they've set up mobile, basically, holes where you can, you know, variations of the course, and you can basically create a tournament from nothing.
That's exactly right. And the beauty of this sport is that, you know, a lot of these courses are in public parks. They're free to play. It's not like traditional golf where you'll have, you know, kind of fairways that are designated just for the sport. In disc golf, courses are designed around parks to fit in with other activities as well. So there might be dog walkers, there might be cyclists. Courses are designed to utilise areas that might be not being used as much. In fact, that's what I do for a full-time job. I'm a disc golf course designer working for Disc Golf Park. And we work with councils, schools, all over Australia to install these courses. and grow the sport.
So here in Melbourne, Andrew, have we got any sort of competitions coming up or events that people could get out and have a look at?
Absolutely. In Victoria, you've probably got the two main clubs,
which
are the Geelong Disc Golf Club and the Melbourne Disc Golf Club.
Okay.
And each of the clubs, they host a come and try league day each month. The Geelong is on the first Saturday of the month, and then the third Sunday of the month is in Melbourne. Their courses are Bowen Valley Disc Golf Course in Geelong, and you've got the Ruffey Lake Disc Golf Course in Melbourne, in Doncaster.
Oh, yeah. No, Ruffey Lake. So you're
welcome to go along there. You can contact the clubs through their websites and find out some more information. But you can go along, you can learn from some of the top local pro players and get involved that way. The next big event happening in Victoria will be hosted in Geelong at Drysdale, and that is the Victorian Disc Golf Open. And this event will be in its 10th year this year, which is very exciting. So the local Geelong and Melbourne clubs each host this event in each city, taking turns each year. And that event will kick off on the 22nd of April.
Yeah. Andrew, you just touched on something very, very quickly, that there are professional players and you can make money out of doing well at disc golf. Obviously, I think it was a $25,000 prize pool at the Australian Open. So if you want to get yourself on the world stage and you fancy a sport to actually turn professional at, then disc golf may be your option.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And it's a fun way to earn a buck, that's for sure. And to give you an example, in the Open division, the men's Open division, our top four players were Ricky Wysocki, yeah, Evil McMahon, Paul McBeth, and Manabu Kajiyama from Japan. Ricky Wysocki, he won by a one stroke on the final hole, which was an absolute nail biter. So if you're interested to watch that final, you can pretty much just go on YouTube, just search Aussie Open Disc Golf 2017, and you'll no doubt find it there. And Ricky walked away with $4,000 in his pocket for taking out the win, which is a great effort. And we also had in the women's division, Paige Pierce from the US. She won quite clearly by about 20 strokes over Jennifer Allen, and she was actually earned herself a position to play in the US DGC, which is the US Championships, which is happening in October in Rock Hill, North Carolina, and that's probably the biggest major event on the calendar, and I think it's only the second time ever that a woman's qualified for the event, so congratulations to Paige Pierce.
Andrew, I was going to ask you, we're talking to Andrew Ferguson, Frisbee Golf, which is certainly growing around the world. When you're one of these sports that's trying to get more notoriety and more, you know, interviews like this and just exposure to your sport, what's sort of the strategy of the organisation to try and actually go about that? Or is it, you find that, you know, people just sort of discover you through other people and the sport sort of grows that way, or you actually got a real strategy to, you know, try and make some inroads in what is a, you know, very competitive sporting landscape in this country?
Look, absolutely. Australia's a sport-loving country, and a sport like ours can easily get swamped up amongst all the other mainstream sports out there. So, look, we are making a concerted effort now to really kind of get the sport out there. I personally, I've just joined onto the ADG board, so it's the Sports Governing Bodies board, okay, as Director of Development. There's been a bit of a shuffle there on the board recently, and so we're at the moment putting together a strategy to get disc golf into the mainstream arena and getting lots of people playing. So we're going to be working on getting into schools, getting a lot of more kids involved, and also women as well.
Great stuff. I mean, we love sports with a point of difference on this little hour I do with Beefy. And who knows who's out there listening? You might just be sitting there, as you say, Beefy.
Yeah.
There's a sport for everyone. And if you can go and put $4,000 in your pocket,
yeah,
you know, why not maybe take up that sport if your other sporting pursuits haven't quite worked out?
And every Australian has thrown a frisbee at the beach.
Oh, no.
They definitely have.
It's a bit like playing, you know, a bit of table tennis when
yep.
you go on holiday
yep.
in the local motel.
Right.
And it's a very unique sport. It's very exciting as well. Once you've got your head around the concept, it can be a great thing to be a part of, because you can go out there by yourself and play.
Yep.
You can go down on a Friday afternoon with your mates down to the park and have a throw. You can join a club. There's lots of different ways you can kind of get into the sport. And it's exciting to watch. You know, it's a little bit different to golf. You know, you'll see the guys tee off on the hole in golf. You'll see the little white ball fly in the air. And that's about it. But, you know, not knocking golf. It's a great sport. But in disc golf, you'll get guys and girls stand up to the tee. They'll grab a different colour disc. Mm. It's a different model. They'll throw it sidearm. They'll throw it backhand. They'll throw it overhand. They'll go around the left of the tree, over the trees, roll it on the ground 150 metres. Yeah. It's very, very dynamic and very interesting to watch.
Good stuff. Thank you, Andrew. Really appreciate the chat again. We'll certainly keep in touch.
Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate you giving me the chance to talk about disc golf.
No worries, Andrew. Thanks, buddy.
Andrew Ferguson there, disc golf, often referred to as frisbee golf. Check it out, because it might just be the sport that can make you a star around the world.
Get yourself on the world stage.
We're going to chat to Barry Lister. Next, the world of lawn bowls. We have an amazing amount of success in this country with lawn bowls, young and old, across lots of different generations. Max Frick is going to join us as well.
Yep.
You've had a chat to him during the week.
Had a chat to Max in the week. Yeah, he's just off to, he's actually in Bali right now, but just about to get ready for Europe, basically.
Speedway champion.
Yeah.
There you go. We'll have a chat to Max. We'll be if you certainly caught up with Max, and we'll play that a little bit later on this hour. At 28 past three, happy to take your calls as well. 9429 1116. 4:21. Welcome back at 11:16 SEN. I say 21 minutes to 4. 29 minutes to 4
good
o'clock.
Good maths, BP. Good
Not
maths.
That I want the day to go any quicker. We're just seeing a little out for Australia.
Yep.
Not great. Travis Head.
Yep. Top edge. Caught on the boundary. Mind you, he was right on the boundary as well. Nearly got there. The ground at Hamilton's not huge by any means, but even
none
the top edge.
Are.
Yeah, that's right. We were saying to the Kiwi about Auckland.
Yeah,
I sat in Eden Park behind, kind of in the slips area, and you're literally 25 yards from the slip quarter.
Well, that's the oddest shaped cricket ground, isn't it? In the whole world.
Remote. And they years ago they used to actually angle it so that behind square was very short. Now they're going straight up and down.
Yep.
Amazing. You can hear the slips talk to each other. That's how close you are in the stands. It's you get a top edge, and I think they even measured it, from the stumps to the boundary line. It was only 52 metres or something. It was pretty ridiculous.
I used to play on a cricket ground when I played juniors, Tram Road in Doncaster, for those that might know that little ground's tucked out. If you know Doncaster Shopping Town, you're going down Elgar Road towards Box Hill, and sort of tucked in there somewhere. And you just get a little nick, and it was fantastic. Straight to the boundary within about half a second.
You know what they call it? Cambridge University, you play in the first class scene, and not a part of the Candy Championship, but they also play on a bit of a sloping ground, and it's quite short in the corners.
Mm.
And opening batsmen just used to lean on the ball and guide it to third man. And they used to call that the Fenner's Drive.
Ah, there you go.
So they just used to guide it down there for four. Beautiful.
I need to talk to you about Sutton United a little bit later on.
Oh.
Now, Barry Lister is going to join us here, Beefy. Of course, synonymous with lawn bowls, still competing, of course, playing his part away from the rink as well. And, of course, we had Barry on the show back in November. We were leading into the World Championships. The amount of Australian success is quite phenomenal. And Barry rejoins us here on Sunday Sports Central. Barry, nice to catch up with you.
Yeah, good afternoon, fellas. Thanks for having me back on the show.
And if we can be parochial for a moment from a Victorian perspective, if we just go back to those world champs, we had, I think, three Victorians picking up medals.
That's right. So myself, I got a two silvers, so in the men's fours and triples, and Carla Krizanik, who plays out at the Sunbury Bowling Club, walked away with two golds in the women's triples and fours, and Aaron Wilson, he plays out of the Clayton Bowls Club, he walked away with a silver in the fours and a gold in the men's pairs. So, from a Victorian perspective, lots of medals, and from a ball of sport Australian effort, we walked away with a lot more medals as well.
Yeah, no, obviously, it was a very successful World Championships in New Zealand, and unfortunately, the Kiwis just pipped you to the big one, I suppose. But the Aussie girls did pick up the World Championship in terms of the females. But it's fantastic, and bowls is very, very strong, as you well know, Barry.
Yeah, there were some countries there that I only just realised sort of they played lawn bowls. I think we had Turkey competing.
Right.
It was just great to see just little places, Cook Islands, Norfolk Islands, and just places from all around the world, Samoa, Philippines, etc. So, but it was always going to be South Africa and sort of the English countries. But New Zealand on the home greens were hard to beat, and walked away with the best performed men's team and Australia best form women's, but those New Zealanders really stood up on their home greens, and yeah, it's always hard to beat them over there. But the Commonwealth Games is just over a year away up on the Gold Coast, and that's what we're setting our sights for now.
You must enjoy, I suppose, seeing some of those emerging nations start to compete at World Championship, even though, you know, the level of competition is going to take, you know, some time. We've seen it probably with netball in this country. More nations around the world are starting to emerge. But that's a good sign, certainly, Barry, for the sport, that it's certainly growing and more countries are taking it up.
Yeah, definitely, Brett. It's great to see. I think Brunei, they were at the World Championships, and I think they're coached by a guy out of New South Wales who is a decent sort of level bowler himself. So we've had some Australian players, New Zealanders, even some English bowlers get into these countries now, India, Malaysia, and really help them with their high performance programs and coaching, and they're really coming on leaps and bounds. So I think Philippines cleaned up at Hong Kong the last couple of years at the Classic in some of the women's events and that. So they're another little country that they mightn't have a lot that play, but they're getting the right assistance in coaching and training. And it's just great to see these nations giving bowls a go.
Yeah, it's interesting, Barry. I actually went up to the Champion of Champions event at Helensvale on the Gold Coast. And you talk about Brunei even this year. I think Brunei got a bronze medal in the men's and they actually got a silver medal in the women's event. So Brunei obviously taking to lawn bowls, but just mentioning that Champion of Champions event, I think Scott Thorburn won the men's for Australia and Natasha Scott won the women's for Australia as well. Obviously, home advantage sometimes means everything in lawn bowls.
It does, yeah. You've got to know the conditions well, be match fit in those conditions. So, it's pretty similar to a lot of sports, I suppose, whether it's in tennis on clay courts or hard courts, etc. But in bowls, yeah, the greens do vary. Southern, Northern Hemisphere, indoor, outdoor. So, yeah, you need to get that match fitness. But to see Scott and Tash walk away with the gold medals up there at the Champions was fantastic. And little birdie tells me, I think the lady who got runner-up from Brunei, she was meant to fly to the World Championships in New Zealand a week or so later, but the achievement was so big on the sporting radar for Brunei. I think they flew her back to wine and dine her and treat her like royalty, and then she had to go then back to New Zealand a week later. So to see them to get a silver at that sort of competition was great for a country like Brunei. But within our home country, we've got a lot of people out there giving the sport a go at different levels. And, yeah, there is some success to be had if people want to get right into it.
Barry Lester from the World of Lawn Bowls with us. Before Beefy fires one more at you, we're just keeping an eye on the cricket because this run chase is going a little bit pear-shaped for Australia. 282 to get, 6 for 174. James Faulkner, great catch by Ross Taylor off the bowling of Trent Bolt out for a duck. They had to go to the review. The third umpire was a low catch down after Travis Head went for 53. So it's on the bat of Marcus Stoinis. He was the man to go to in the first at One Day International, so we'll keep a close on that. 6 for 174, the Aussies.
Now, Barry, you're off to the South Africa Masters very shortly to represent Australia again, but then in March is the World Cup in Warilla in New South Wales. Are you doing that one as well?
I won't be in that one, but yeah, definitely South Africa. Only us two Victorians in Carla Krizanik and myself were going over on Tuesday with the national coach, so never been over there, and it's a prestigious invitational event. So, so it's a men's and women's singles, and then we've got the Bowls Premier League, which is on Fox Sports and Sky Sports New Zealand, end of February. I think it's 27 to end of start of March. That's the big one where we have bowls on TV every night.
Yep.
And then you've got World Cup at Warilla, Australian Open in June. I think it's $250,000 prize money, Australian Open in June, and nice. Then all of a sudden we'll be trialling and training for Commonwealth Games, which will be here before we know it.
Great stuff. Good on you, Barry. You're a great spokesperson and a great competitor. It's a very nice resume you built in the world of lawn bowls, and continued success, and we'll certainly keep in touch.
Thanks very much, guys.
Good
Barry
luck, Barry.
Lester, who needs no introduction if you know your lawn bowls. After the break, Max Frick, of course, a star in Speedway. Beefy has had a chat with him during the week, so we're going to bring you that chat. Australia's 6 for 174 in the cricket, and a lot more to come right here on Sunday Sports Central. 18 to 4 here on Melbourne's home of sport. Hope you're enjoying your Sunday afternoon all the way through to 6 o'clock. Kieran Blake is with me. Make sure you check him out if you haven't already. 365 at Dave's of Sport, although as one SMS did say a little bit earlier, Beefy for Best New Talent at the Radio Awards.
Thanks, Dad.
I went to one commercial radio awards.
Oh, did you?
Up in magnificent Canberra in 1999.
Nice. Is there a radio awards in Melbourne?
Well, they move around.
Oh, they move around.
Yeah,
okay.
So the commercial radio awards, they'll hold them in Melbourne sometimes or other states. Have a couple of quiet ales and kick back.
Nice.
Now, Max Frick, tell us a bit about Max, and you've caught up with him during the week.
He's another proud Victorian. Took up Speedway when he was about 10, 11 years old. He's only 20 now. He's won the Australian Under 21 Championship three out of the last 4 years.
Okay.
So when he's, you know, 16, he's that. I mean, that's the first time you can step on a 500cc bike anyway.
Mm.
So he picked up the Under 21
yep.
Championship. He actually got a few bike troubles last year, but he didn't take out the Australian Under 21s. He took out the World Under 21 Championship instead. So he's a World Under 21 champion. And that is the kind of the next step onto the Grand Prix stage and becoming world champion. So in terms of that, absolutely phenomenal. And considering Speedway in Australia, it's such a minority sport.
Mm.
And, you know, nobody in the city rides motorbikes.
No.
It's all country kids. And for them to take on the world scale, and these guys growing up with Speedway in Scandinavia, in Poland, in the UK,
yep.
It's just phenomenal for this lad to take on the big boys and get to that stage.
Outstanding. Well, here is Beefy's chat with Max during the week.
Got great pleasure in welcoming the world under 21 Speedway champion, all the way from Mansfield in country Victoria, Max Frick. Max, thanks for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
And congratulations. Obviously, you're also the new Australian under 21 champion for this season. So, taking that into the European season, that's got to be good for the confidence.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I've won it a few times in the past, and I lost it the year just gone, and it's really nice to regain that and that bit of extra confidence of doing well here in Australia before we head back.
You're exactly right, actually. The only year you haven't won the under-21s in Australia is the year you won the world under-21s. So hopefully that's not going to rear its ugly head.
No, let's hope not. But we head back and we got everything sorted over there now. So, you know, we're looking to go back and have another successful year in the world under-21 championship as well.
And you came fifth in the against the big boys in the senior championship. So there was some great racing in that four-round series this year. I went up to Undera and... it's great to see Australian Speedway and all the young country kids coming through, you know, making a name for themselves.
Yeah, for sure. It's awesome. We had a lot stronger field this year than what we've had in the past, the Australian titles, which is really good to see. And it's nice to see a few more boys coming back from overseas and getting involved within the Australian series. So it's good for all the local tracks as well as, you know, myself and everyone racing have a bit of extra competition. So we ended up fifth. That was, that was good. We would have liked to get maybe a couple more results a bit higher. We had a bit of bad luck in the final round, unfortunately. But it was, a really great series. And all in all, you know, it was nice to get back on the bike and get riding again before we head back overseas.
And it's fantastic that the Australian Series now has a big carrot of getting a spot in the Australian Grand Prix at Etihad Stadium. And, you know, riding in front of, I mean, the first year, 27,000 fans, just over 20,000 fans this year. I think that Grand Prix at the end of the season can only grow and grow, and hopefully with more Australian participation. I talked to Mark Lemon, and he wants to make this, you know, the biggest Grand Prix of the season, bigger than Cardiff and bigger than some of the events in Poland.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely got the potential. You know, the stadium's there. Everyone comes out for it, so it's a huge Grand Prix, from a venue side of things, it is probably one of the biggest we have on the circuit. So over the years, we can build on the numbers that we've had so far, and like Lemo says, try and build it into being one of the biggest Grand Prix of the season.
Now, for people who don't realise, in Speedway, you ride all over Europe, and a typical week for you is kind of midweek in the UK, and then you're off to Poland on a Sunday. You're riding Sweden for Rospigana on a Tuesday, and perhaps Regenvard in Denmark on a Thursday. It's just non-stop travel, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. You know, we have periods of time where it's non-stop for days on end in different countries every day. I think I had a period there last year where I had about 14 days in a row across five different countries, and I was never in the same country for 2 days at a time, constantly all over the place, you know, especially when you throw a couple of under-21 rounds or Grand Prix qualifiers in. It's a pretty hectic schedule sometimes, you know, keeping on top of everything and you know, trying to get enough sleep to function properly.
Just
some of the little things you've got to deal with along the way.
And you know, it's a hectic lifestyle. Obviously, you're in Europe for 8 or 9 months a year. is it great to come back to Australia and enjoy some of that, some of Mum's home roast?
Exactly. You know, we're over there for a long time, I guess, without family and friends you've grown up with and things like that. And then we have a pretty hectic time over there. So it's nice to come back home and drop it back a gear and enjoy life at home and the simple things like Mum's
post. Well, going back to the start, there's not huge numbers of people riding Speedway. Why did you choose Speedway? Or is it just something you kind of, had a go at and found out you were actually quite good at it, so you kicked on?
Yeah, it's something a little bit like that. I was, I was fortunate enough as a young kid, I was racing motocross, and we had a friend of ours that came along to watch a couple of times who had an interest in Speedway and actually put me on my first Speedway bike. So that was, obviously nowadays look back at it, I'm super grateful of his help and I wouldn't be where I am without it. I did a bit of motocross and Speedway as a little tacker and progressed, got better and better all the time and ended up being not too bad at Speedway. So, when I kind of turned 14, 15, we gave it a good crack and it worked out.
And this year's world champion is the American Greg Hancock, who during the season actually turned 46. So realistically, you've only got 27 years left in your career, Maxine, as you're only 20.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure time will fly. I guess you'll ask Greg and he'll tell you. I guess it'll go in a blink. Just make the most of it and hopefully, we hope to have a successful career such as Greg. He's definitely someone that all of us look up to and see how he's still going today at such a high level.
Now, Speedway is one of the most dangerous forms of motorsport you can get. You put your bodies on the line every time you sit on a bike. Have you managed to stay kind of injury-free throughout your fledgling career?
Touch wood, so far I've been pretty lucky, yeah. We definitely have our fair share of get-off. I think this year I've fractured my shoulder blade and had a couple of little dramas with that, but nothing major during the World Cup. But other than that, I've been pretty lucky over the last few years. So hopefully we can keep on that roll and keep fairly injury-free.
Now, Australian Speedway is, like I said, the kids coming through are amazing. The biggest challenger to your World Under 21 title this year will be another Australian, Jack Holder, who gave you hell of a race in the Under 21 Championship.
Yeah, for sure. We've got Jack, Brady, and I, Brady Kurtz also. We've always grown up together. We've raced ever since we were about 9 or 10 together. So, they're one of the top guys in the championship as well. But then you've also Polish guys are always super strong. They have such a good junior program in the progressing young kids there, and then also Denmark and Sweden are huge as well, plus everyone from other countries.
Dimitri Burge, who's French, who don't have a huge Speedway history, he was up around the podium positions of the 21s as well. So it's great to see Speedway jumping into new countries. And, in terms of the Russians coming back into the fray, Emil Safudinov will be back in the Grand Prix this year as well. So good to see the Russians getting back involved. And Speedway seems to be growing in kind of these enclaves of Europe now. And it just shows the power of satellite television and being able to access live meetings.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, television helps that out a lot. The sport's all over the world nowadays. So, hopefully the sport can keep growing and you do keep seeing new people from all over the world. So, there's plenty of competition out there and let's just hope that I can do well myself. Just got to look on what I'm doing and hopefully I can keep improving.
Now, as a proud Victorian, I know that if anyone out there is listening and wants to sponsor Max, how do we get in touch with you? How do they get their logo on your leathers?
The best way to get in contact with me is through our website. There's an email address and contact us through our website, which is maxfrickracing.com. There's a very small help from Australia when it comes to the international scene, so any help greatly appreciated in coming on board and helping me chase in another World Under 21 Championship this year.
Fantastic, and hopefully we get to the Grand Prix qualifiers as well and get you on the Grand Prix stage a bit more permanently. Look, Max, yeah. Enjoy your holiday. I know you're off to Bali. Thanks for spending a bit of time with us, and like I said, I do my best to promote Speedway as best I can. I think it's the best sport in the world, and you guys are amazingly brave to throw a leg over. Enjoy your holiday and best of luck in the European season and defend that World Under 21 Championship for us.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks very much for that.
There he is, Max Frick, catching up with our very own Beefy Blake, and we just learned a bit more about
Yeah,
Max.
We did. We just had a text message in from Pete, who says that Max is actually Simon Gerrans, the cyclist, is his cousin. So what a gene pool.
The world just gets smaller.
We just have to find these families where we need to breed and, create these sporting superstars.
Max, very nice. A good interview, that. It's amazing. And, since you've been coming to this studio, we've just unearthed got to be exposed to a number of Australians. who yeah. we don't, when we pick up the Herald Sun, the Age, we're not reading about their name, doing outstanding things around the globe.
You know, we talked to Rhiannon, the cliff diver, who's world cliff diving champion, and, you know, you wouldn't know that.
No.
You know, it's just one of those things, and, you know, I love all sport, and, I do my best to go and watch it and immerse myself as best I can, and you go and meet these people. They're so passionate about what they do as well. You know, and like Andrew Ferguson said, you know, they're just desperate for that little bit of exposure. And, you know, what we can do here is perhaps given to them. And, you know, as we keep saying, there is a sport out there for everyone.
We still want someone to stump Beefy, though. To come up with a sport that Beef, if you can stump him, you're doing an amazing job, because anytime we bring up a sport, Beefy's all over. He's got some facts and figures ready. He knows who's representing that sport. But if you can stump him with something that's way off Broadway, you're always welcome to give us a call on 94291116. We're going to take our final break. We'll come back with a bit more Kieran, Beefy, Blake up next. 5-4 here in 1116. SEN keeping a very close eye on the cricket. It's going to be, well, maybe a bit of an uphill battle for Australia. Still got 14 overs remaining. It's just coming down to wickets, Beefy. Six for 180 at the moment. So Pat Cummins joining Marcus Stoinis. Could he be the hero once again individually, trying to get Australia over the line? 32 not out off 41 deliveries. And Pat Cummins looking to start to hit some boundaries. And he hits his first. He goes to five.
Yeah, scored some decent runs in the Big Bash as well, Pat Cummins. He can bat, and it's a small ground, as we've said, so you never know what might happen. If this comes to down to the wire again, Stoinis is going to be an absolute genuine hero.
Absolutely. Now, I tell you what, so many things to keep an eye on this weekend. You need eyes at the back, front, and side of your head. But I tell you what, Antonio Conte, the great Italian, who's just mastering the English beautifully, and he's got to do these big press conferences all the time. But I tell you what, his celebration overnight. Chelsea 3-1 over Arsenal at Stamford Bridge, just leaping into the supporters there and just being embraced.
Oh, fantastic.
who does that as the average manager?
Sometimes you're a bit wary about doing it in the English league, so you never know, you might lose your wallet. Basically, especially those Chelsea fans. But oh, what a goal, though. That Eden has a goal. It was fantastic. Yeah. Worth celebrating. But Chelsea, they look unstoppable at the minute.
They really
do. It's Arsenal, you know, they're top four team, and Chelsea took them apart, really.
The interest at the other end now. I mean, we're just talking during the break how tight it is in the relegation battle.
The bottom six teams in the Premier League is, you know, 2 points difference between the whole six. And it's... you know, it's an absolute dogfight. You know, those six teams include Leicester, who obviously were champions last year. You know, Sunderland actually played Palace last night. They're the bottom two, and Sunderland were actually 4-0 up at half time. They actually only went, it was 4-0 at full time as well. But Sam Allardyce is the new boss at Palace, very embarrassed by that performance. And the fans are starting to get on the players' back, not necessarily Big Sam's back.
They normally go for Sam early, don't they?
Choose
that gun a little bit harder.
Yeah, so it's, you know, Palace are up against it, Sunderland up against it. Hull actually got 1-2-0 over Liverpool last night. Liverpool are struggling again all of a sudden. I got a bit of flack last week for forgetting that Liverpool knocked over Plymouth Argyle in the cup as their only win in January. And now they've started February with a loss to... lost to Hull.
Losing to Hull, it's a bit of a concern. Can't say there's the same level of excitement in Scotland.
In Scotland.
24 points separating Celtic, and Aberdeen and Rangers on 43 points.
I can't see the interest. If you're a fan of Celtic, you'd love to win, but 24 points clear in the first weekend of February? Come on.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a professional league. It's tough. I mean... look, I put myself out there and say it's time now for Celtic to get in some form, whether it's a second EPL2 type deal. It's time for Celtic and Rangers. They got the resources. I know Rangers are essentially a new club. They fought their way back from, you know, the lower leagues after being demoted.
Absolutely.
But it is time. I think it is.
And just one for you. I did mention it briefly earlier.
Yep.
Did you see the swarm of bees?
Oh, yes, indeed, Johannesburg.
extraordinary. South Africa, Sri Lanka, the one day. South Africa won easy by 7 wickets. AB de Villiers, 60 not out overnight, 3-164. But play was stopped for around about an hour.
An hour. And it wasn't until a local beekeeper, who's not even a professional beekeeper, turned up to the ground with his gear that they could actually do. He said, I love the quote, he said, "When I saw them bring out the fire extinguisher, I knew I had to take action."
That is the funniest moment I've ever seen. Here's the guy just walks out with I'll get rid of him. Bang!
I can't believe that. The players had to lie down for an hour.
Thank you, Beefy. Always good to spend an hour with you. We'll catch you tomorrow night. 11 o'clock.
11 till 12.
Mark Fine.